Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you. And it is now time for Greenside Up. In studio today, we have Jacob Weber and David Skrantz. Guys, how are you doing this morning?
Very well.
Doing good. How are you?
I am doing really good. Was here a little late last night, election coverage, but I'm all good now. So I've had my Dr. Pepper, so that's my coffee. Anyway, okay, guys, well, again, first of all, before we get started, if you guys have any questions for Jacob or David, what they were going to be talking about, our numbers are 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. Jacob, you wanted to talk this morning about reading pesticide labels, because those are really important, are they not?
Well, that's right. I had a question about using a particular pesticide in home landscape. And if it were me, I would definitely not use that particular pesticide, although the person is willing to accept potential for damage to other plants in the yard in a nearby area or even further away. But I guess that's up to them. I checked the label itself, and the particular pesticide was not labeled for residential use or very cautious, very definitely something I would not never use in the landscape that close to a house or a building because of the potential for this particular pesticide to cause damage to other plants in the yard. I'm talking about a particular product is Tordon RTU. And it will definitely do the job it was intended to do. The person used it correctly. The potential for off-site damage is significant, very significant. And this particular product is water, moves in water, and can leach into nearby areas or leach into the soil and other desirable plants in the nearby area. Or even further away, I've seen particular areas or locations where the pesticide actually was leached and traveled more than 100 feet off target. And did quite a bit of damage. Actually, I would guess probably more like 200 feet. And it's not good. Always, before you even buy a pesticide, pesticides are a valuable management tool. So I'm not opposed to pesticides. But read the label and understand what that particular pesticide is intended to do, and how it is intended to be used, and how it is intended to be applied, and any other precautionary statements within that label that will protect both the applicator and the environment within the area where the pesticide is applied, and potentially protect other people in off-target areas as well. The pesticides that are typically available over the counter, some of them can't get you into trouble, and some of them don't. But always read the label. I've had years ago one person applied a pesticide on the apple tree and then read the label and couldn't find any place on the label where it was labeled for food crops. Called me and wanted to know what they could do, what they should do. They wanted me to tell them it's okay to eat the apples. I said, you'll have to destroy the crop. There's nothing you can do. It's not labeled for that crop or food producing a plant. It's not labeled for that. And there is no guarantee that food would be safe to consume. So that's a kiss of goodbye. 1 year of production out. And you can't do anything about it unless you're willing to accept the consequences. If you want to eat it, that's up to you. But I definitely cannot tell anybody that's safe to consume that product because it's off-label. It's very important when you use pesticides, understand that label. And like I said, read the label before you even buy the product. It may not be the suitable product for you to use. And then also consider alternative measures that can be employed for managing the particular pest, and which one is least damaging or least invasive or least risky within that particular environment. And then may involve a little bit extra work, like using a hoe instead of spraying some Roundup or something like that. Yeah, it's some things, there are alternative measures that can be used for management there. So that's my spiel.
Definitely, I got to be sure to read those labels and make sure the pesticide can be used on food crops. Now, how does... If that person say they lost, you know, the apple tree, you know, for that year, will they be able to use it the next year?
It should be okay the following year.
Okay.
But since the pesticide was applied on the food, it's not labeled for that.
Right.
It's just, they can't say it's safe.
Right.
It's off label, period. And that's it.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to eat something that doesn't at least say that it's food friendly. Also in a studio with us this morning, we have a David Skrantz. David, again, good morning. You were wanting to talk about, you know, now that we're past the Halloween season, about feeding pumpkins to livestock.
Yes, now that Halloween is over, you may be looking to get rid of jack-o'-lanterns you have, or maybe even those pumpkins you've used for fall decorations. I know some people are already talking about putting Christmas decorations up, even though it's just the beginning of November. And
too early.
Yeah. So some people wonder if pumpkins are all right to feed livestock or chickens that they have, or maybe they have friends and they're wondering if it's okay to give those pumpkins to their friends to feed to their livestock. And to answer that question, yes, pumpkins are safe to feed livestock and chickens. It is recommended that the stem is removed from the pumpkin before feeding it to livestock because it could be a choking hazard. And then also, if pumpkins were carved as jack-o'-lanterns, sometimes I hear people have soaked the jack-o'-lanterns in bleach to try and preserve them so they'll last longer. And if that's been done, then you can't feed those jack-o'-lanterns to livestock because the bleach can be harmful to them. And also, if there's any wax on parts of the jack-o'-lantern, you don't want to feed that to livestock either. So if it has wax on it and you can remove the wax or cut those pieces out, then that will be okay. And if you've also painted the pumpkins as decorations, that paint can be toxic to livestock. So those are just a few cases where the pumpkin itself is safe to feed, but if any of those things have been done to the pumpkin as part of the decorations, then you won't want to feed those pumpkins to livestock. And if you're feeding them to larger animals like horses and cattle and also pigs, sometimes you can give the pumpkin to them whole a lot of the times, and they can break it open themselves as they're playing with it or kind of rolling it around. Sometimes you will have animals that are not inclined, or they may be unable to break open the pumpkin themselves. And in those cases, you can cut the pumpkin into pieces, or you can bake it in the oven to soften it before feeding it to the animals. And to bake it in the oven, it's pretty simple. You just preheat the oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit and deseed the pumpkin and remove the top first, and then you can just place the pumpkin, of course, in an oven safe pan. Baking times will vary on the size of the pumpkin. A 3 to 6 pound pumpkin usually takes about 45 minutes to an hour to become soft, and then cutting the pumpkin into slices before baking can reduce the cooking time. And like I said before, you don't have to bake the pumpkin before feeding it to livestock. It could just make it a little bit easier for them to eat. And for smaller livestock like sheep and goats, you probably will need to cut the pumpkin into smaller pieces so it's easier for them to eat it. And then, of course, chickens, they won't be able to break the pumpkin open themselves. So you'll want to crack it open for them so then they can kind of pick through it, or just give them some pieces of the pumpkin. And it is important to remember that while pumpkins aren't harmful and it's all right to feed them to livestock, they're usually not a part of livestock's everyday diet. So you don't want to feed them a large amount of pumpkins at once, because that could upset their stomach and lead to some digestive issues that you may have to deal with. So just feed them, you know, a few pieces at a time as a treat. And pumpkins, they do also provide some nutrients, so they're not just a treat, but they're also a little bit of a nutrient rich snack for livestock. They have high levels of vitamins A and E. They also have folate and fiber, and they're also a reasonable supplemental protein source.
So, like you were saying, you know, it's like a treat to them. So, and that they'll probably definitely enjoy that. But I never realized how tough the outside of a pumpkin can be until I tried to cut one for as a jack-o'-lantern, and wow.
Yeah.
They can be rather tough.
Yeah, they can be rather tough to cut through. And, you know, some livestock, especially if they're used to being fed pumpkins or other vegetables or fruit as treats, then they'll probably go for it right away because they're more familiar with those types of treats or food. If you have livestock that are more just used to the standard pasture and maybe a little bit of grain and hay, then it might take them a while before they eat the pumpkin just because they're not sure what it is.
Yeah, they're just like, what is this thing?
Yeah, they may be a little skeptical at first.
a little worried about it. Another thing you wanted to talk about was there's a deer workshop coming up.
Yes, we will be holding a deer hunting and management workshop on December 3rd at the Kansas State Research and Extension Southeast Research Center in Parsons. They're on Ness Road. If you drive Highway 400 to Parsons, you've probably noticed it. And it will be a really great workshop. We'll be covering deer, field dressing deer, deer management, cover crops. We have Charlie Lee coming down from K-State in Manhattan. He's one of the wildlife specialists. And then we'll also have a representative from the Kansas Department of Wildlife going over some hunter safety and just some important regulations to follow. So it would be a really great time. You can mark it on your calendars now, December 3rd. In the evening, dinner will be provided, and it would be great for all ages to attend.
And when is the time for it? Well, obviously, as you said, is the 5th, I think you said, or the 3rd is when you said it was.
Yes.
What time does it start?
It will start at 5:30.
Okay. 5:30 in the afternoon?
Yes, okay, in the evening.
Okay.
5:30 in the evening.
5:30. Although, you know, a lot of people get out early at 5:30, especially now that the time has fallen back. It's starting to get brighter earlier now. So I was just making sure it was 5:30 p.m., not 5:30. You don't want people showing up and going, hey, where is everybody? You
know, yeah.
It's like, no, it's 12 hours from now, guys.
Sorry, yeah, sorry about that. Definitely in the evening. Thank you for clarifying that.
No, thank you for letting me know. I just wanted to make sure so that anybody's listening that they don't show up too early, so that, because that would be really early. All right, well, we're gonna go ahead and take a break, and we're gonna go to Fox News at the top of the hour. When we we'll come back at around 10 after, you guys will come back in and we will have some more to discuss, and we will also take your calls again. 251-6909-1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Welcome back to Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you, and in studio with me are Jacob Weber and David Scrantz. And Jacob, you came into the studio and said, what do you want to discuss this part of the show? Our poinsettias.
Okay, there we are. No mic.
Sorry about that.
All right. Poinsettias. Yeah, we're getting that time of the year when we start thinking about holiday decorations and for Christmas time. Perfect plant for Christmas time because it naturally blooms at Christmas. And, of course, that's a result of some plants are photoperiodic. That is, they respond, or they produce their flower in response to either a short day period or a long day period. A professor told me it's a long night period. Short day is a long night, or short night for the long day plants, because it's the duration of the dark period that's important. So poinsettias, once the dark period exceeds 12 hours per day, that starts to trigger the development of the flower buds. Flower buds also trigger development of the colorful bracts that we look at on poinsettias, those big red things that look like leaves. We call them bracts because they are no longer functional as a leaf, and but that's the color we really like. And there's multiple colors of poinsettias now, most of them within the range of white, red, or pink. And then, of course, there's the artificial colors. We won't say that people put dye on the poinsettia leaves to make them look blue and other abnormal colors that don't typically occur on poinsettias, but that happens. Well, I guess designer colors, okay. But you have to have a white or a cream-colored poinsettia to do that, to get those different colors. But most of them, the red is the most popular. And like you said, it develops as a result of a long night or period. Poinsettias should become available for consumers here before too long. How to take care of them? They are a subtropical plant. They don't fare too well if exposed to really cold temperatures. One of the things that could happen if they're exposed to cold temperatures for too long, like say temperatures between 30, 35 and 40 degrees Fahrenheit, or maybe even close to 32, you leave them exposed for several hours, it triggers abscission development in the leaves, and they end up those green leaves that are a nice, we call it a foil, that it's a background of the red bracts, and so it makes the red bracts look really nice because you have that green behind it. Well, those leaves that are on the poinsettias, they, okay, it's time to drop leaves, and they drop them all, and you have bare-legged poinsettias, not very attractive anymore. So, way to take care of them, make sure they're not exposed to cold temperatures for long periods of time. Like if you're out shopping and, oh, I see a poinsettia and it's, 20 degrees outside, and okay, you buy it and stick it in the car and keep shopping for the rest of the day, and then you take it home and put it inside, and the next few days it drops all its leaves. That's what's happened. So when you buy a poinsettia, the first thing you want to do is get it home. Get it home. So that may be the last stop you're going to make, especially on a cold day. Now it's warm outside. You don't have to worry about it. But that's one of the things you have to think about when you're buying some nice poinsettias. You can invest a bunch of money in home decoration with those plants, and they're really attractive. And you want to keep them that way. And they will stay that way for a long period of time because of the hybridization that has occurred over last half century. Those plants are a lot better than the original plant, which typically dropped its leaves and the bract stayed on for a few days and then that was it. It's not like that anymore. So taking care of the plant when you get home, it doesn't like really warm rooms. You get the heat up, cranked up 75, 80 degrees. Some people like it that way. That's a little bit too warm for me. And it's a little bit too warm for the poinsettias. They like a cool room temperature, about 65 degrees, maybe 60 at night. Bright, sunny windows are very good for poinsettias. They don't have to be in light. They will survive otherwise, but you can extend the useful life of a poinsettia by keeping it, when not on display, keep it in a bright, sunlit room. it's not going to be enough to keep the plant growing healthy, but it'll keep it for an extended period of time. The bracts stay on for a long time. The leaves stay on for a long time. Watering is fairly simple. Use your fingertips. Feel the soil. If it feels wet, you don't need to water. If it feels damp, it probably should get water. And if it's dry and the leaves are wilting, that's not good. We don't want to get to that point because that can also trigger leaf drop. So we want to use your fingertips, feel the soil, and not just the top, but push your fingers down into the soil a little bit, maybe about a half an inch or an inch, and just feel that soil. If it's too wet, if you keep the plant too wet, that could result in a little fungal disease on the roots, and then you lose the plant sooner. But managing the water is very important. You don't need to fertilize. The plant is not really in the active state of growth at that time. It is developing. The actual flowers on the poinsettias are those little yellow buds at the tip of the branch that produces the red colorful bracts, but really up at the very tip is a little yellow bud. And it's really a flower that doesn't have hardly any petals at all. So that's a gee whiz information. Some concern about poinsettias being poisonous over the years. Some people insist that they're poisonous. Definitely, they're not poisonous at all. And they're safe around children. Typically, I'd keep the plant away from a young child that's going to be putting things in their mouth because it's not a food plant at all. But if they do stick it in their mouth and chew on a little bit, they'll probably spit it out really quick because it's not going to taste good. But it's nothing that's going to make them ill. It's not a poisonous plant at all. It is in the spurge family, Euphorbiaceae. And it does produce a milky latex sap. And there are some individuals that may be somewhat allergic to that sap. So it's not like poison ivy, but just be cautious about getting, if you get sap on you, probably a good idea just to rinse it off right away. It's not going to hurt you, just an occasional touch. But it could end up with some individuals that are fairly sensitive to it. Could produce a little rash.
Well, Jacob, it looks like we have somebody on a line that is wanting to ask a question, so let's go ahead and punch them up. And caller, you're on Green Side Up. How are you doing this morning?
Well, pretty good. Good morning. How are y'all doing?
We're doing good.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, Jake, I have a question. Is it too late to transplant anything?
What are you going to transplant?
Well, I had a small lilac bush. I want to. It's not even 10 inches tall, and I want to transplant it. I did one last week. Or week four last, and it was doing just fine. And I did the same thing with the hydrangea, and it's doing real good too.
Okay.
All right. They're growing a whole lot, but they're not dying.
They're not going to grow.
Well, I don't expect them to grow, but it's still safe to transplant them.
Okay. Typically, on those plants, you'd like to transplant dormant plants or those that are pretty well going dormant. They should be in early phase of dormancy, so they're probably okay. I would suggest that the better time to transplant, of course, is always in late dormancy, after Valentine's Day, after the danger of a real hard freeze has passed, but before any new growth is initiated. Oh, that's always an excellent time. But fall
February?
After Valentine's Day, before the 1st of March. Yeah, if you get some nice days after Valentine's Day, it'd be a good time to transplant. But if it's a matter of necessity, if you have to transplant them now because they're going to end up getting destroyed, then go ahead and transplant. Or if you're willing to gamble with the plant a little bit, I think you're probably okay. Go ahead and transplant now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much, caller, for calling in. And again, Jacob should be able to answer some questions. Again, our number is 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. And back to the poinsettias. When do they? Is this their blooming season right now?
Yeah, in the northern hemisphere, this is the time that they naturally bloom. And if you're going to rebloom a poinsettia, you want to make sure that first day of fall, that they do not are not exposed to artificial light. It's light is not artificial. Okay, the source of the light is not sunlight. The source is electric lights. We don't want to have them exposed to any bright electrical lights, lighting after the sun goes down. And from that point on until the bracts start to produce color, once the bracts start to produce color, they start to turn red. Then the process is complete, and from that point on, it doesn't make any difference. But it takes a few weeks of long, dark periods, longer than 12 hours, to get the poinsettia to bloom. And you can rebloom poinsettias every year. You can keep the plant. The plant is actually a woody shrub as it gets older, and it can last for years and years, provided you have a space for it. If you have a living room that's fairly large and you just have a hankering to keep your poinsettia from year to year, you can do it. It's possible. And you can rebloom them every year. That's possible. Or if you're like most folks, put them in a compost pile. Get yourself a new one every year for decoration.
If you were going to grow your own poinsettia, when's the best time of the year to plant the poinsettia?
Well, the poinsettia is going to be a perennial plant, and it's going to be potted. You just repot it, and maybe into a larger pot in the spring, usually around the first part of March. And then you're going to grow it. It's going to start producing or initiate new leaves. And from that point on, you're just continuing to grow it. It thrives very well outdoors in good sunlight and or half day morning sun, afternoon shade, be good for it. Just find a place to keep it. And then you're going to have to protect it from freezing temperatures after it gets into the fall. And that dark period is a little bit difficult to accomplish because we generally don't have places indoors where we don't turn on the lights. That's kind of hard to do. And a lot of us don't have greenhouses, so yeah, it's just something that maybe you'd like to keep a poinsettia plant and use it as a ornamental shrub in a pot from year to year. And maybe occasionally you end up getting lucky, get it to rebloom. That's what you can do. But as far as planting, you start out with a plant and you just keep it growing.
I had a friend that every Christmas, man, he had poinsettias all over the place, and it just was one of his favorite plants to have around. Obviously, because it's a real holiday looking plant, with it being red, and then Christmas, the colors of Christmas are green and red. It was always one of his favorite plants. Just that he would have them like all over his house. It was amazing to see. That is going to be, we are near the end of the show today, but do we have any final thoughts? David, is there anything else you needed to talk about today?
I was just going to add, and we talked about it a little bit last time I was on, but deer are on the move, and with time change, be on the lookout for deer, especially as you're driving to and from work, as those are usually in dawn and dusk hours when deer like to be on the move. So stay alert, pay more attention to the road and roadside, and intentionally look for deer. And slow down if you see deer crossing signs. They're usually posted where deer vehicle collisions have repeatedly occurred, and also near woods, parks, golf courses, and streams or creeks. These are areas where deer are more likely to be. And just drive at a reduced speed if you're in one of these areas. If you're driving slower, you have a better chance of avoiding a deer. And if you see a deer standing on the side of the road when you're driving, make sure to slow down, because they do have a tendency to bolt out onto the road suddenly. And they also like to travel in groups. So if you see one cross the road, slow down, because there's good chance that others will be crossing the road shortly after.
And that kind of happened to me a few weeks ago. I didn't hit a deer, but I was coming down 8th Street, and it surprised me a lot because 8th Street's kind of a heavily traveled road in Coffeeville. But I was coming down 8th Street and, you know, going about 30, which is the speed limit. And all of a sudden, come deer just on the side of the road, just hanging out. He looks at me and goes, just stared. And I slowed down, and he bolted the other direction, thankfully. He didn't bolt in my direction, but he just kind of stared at me for like a few seconds and then just took off back into the woody area near 8th Street. But he was just like, he wasn't too wild about seeing me, apparently. So, but yeah, they can be out pretty much any time of day. So, but especially, like I said, dusk and dawn is the time when they're out on the move. So,
yes, definitely.
Definitely got to watch out for those guys, because they can cause major car damage if you're going a little too fast.
Yes, they can.
All right. Well, guys, thank you very much for coming in today. I really do appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week.
Thank you.
All right. That was Green Side Up right here on the mighty 690 KGGF. Open lines coming on right after this.